Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, it's a little like cheating, because our 10th anniversary is actually the 24th, the 10th birthday of the horn, but we're not going to be live tomorrow evening, because it's, Saturday. So we'll just kind of celebrate our 10th birthday this evening, and maybe Monday. Who knows how big a big an extravaganza it might become, huh? Yeah, yes indeed. And meanwhile, I'm bouncing over to the chat room. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. 10 years I've been saying that now. or almost 10. It's a matter of hours, really. We're less than... Okay, so that would be 23 hours and 57 minutes and... Hey, call it 35 seconds. Okay? Yeah, whatever. Jeremy in Vermont letting me know loud and clear on TuneIn. Thank you, Jeremy. I do appreciate it. I don't, it's a radio program, so it's not like we can have cake or cakes and ices or yaws and goiters or, but it's worth noting, I think. It is certainly worth noting that we've been at this for 10 years. More than 10 if you count the bad old days of terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market.
And I just wanted to step in real quick and say happy 10 years, everybody. It's been a hell of a one.
Yeah. And that's Berg, who, when he started out on this program, sounded a lot more like this.
Well, it started out, it sounded a lot like this, and then all of a sudden, before we knew it,
I was right here.
Yeah, he answers my phone sometimes, and I go, Bob? And he goes, yeah.
It's fun.
I used to do that to my dad, too. It's cute. Welcome to the 10th anniversary program for the Horn. And you know what? It's the community that y'all have built that makes this so very special. There are folks who have been listening for 10 years plus. I mean, our buddy Jim over in the greater Beckley area. Jim's been listening since the bad old days of terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market. So we'll just see where the evening takes us. And so as we enter the program, we do so. This is and has been community-driven radio. We have been able to do all of this because of your determination that we continue to do this. This is community, and it is something that you have insisted continue. And I wanted to share with you a note a couple of notes. Our buddy Tom, this came in last night, actually, about 17 hours ago after the program had ended. Our buddy Tom in the Bay Area, the man who, among other things, helped me check a box off on the bucket list of, you know, sailing a couple of years ago in San Francisco Bay. Something that will live forever in my memory. Tom wrote in and said, 10 years, and I've been listening for 9, 11 months, and a couple of weeks. Yeah. Here in the Bay Area, I see a lot of Bernie bumper stickers, Tom says, a few Hillary, the occasional Cruz and Rubio. I don't think that I've seen a T-Rump one yet. Definitely no Jebbia. But yesterday, a passing car caught my eye. I sped up to be sure, and yes, in fact, I really did see a Camacho Not Sure 2016 bumper sticker. I'm not kidding. I thought about following the car to a destination to congratulate the driver and to ask if he or she was a Hornedanista, or to spread the word. But then I thought better of it. So if there's a Horn family member driving around in a white car with that sticker, Camacho Not Sure 2016, I've found you out, says Tom. But that's a sidelight, Tom continues. That's a sidelight to the main point of this message. I'd like to put up a birthday challenge, Tom says, but with a special twist. Let's call it Tom's Round It Off Challenge. You see, I cringe in empathy with every odd amount contribution. Stand by. I need a voice from Ferg for this. Tom says, I cringe in empathy with every odd amount contribution.
It hurts us off.
Exactly. So here's the deal. For Friday and Monday, sandwiching the 10th anniversary, I'd like to offer a match of only contributions that are a multiple of 10 up to a maximum of $300. No $17, no odd cents. Not that I want to prohibit any contributions, but that doesn't qualify for the match. It's open until the end of the program on Monday. Let's go. So there it is. Tom's rounded off challenge up to the first $300 that comes in. If you want to participate, it comes in even amounts. Multiples of 10, please. So that's there, and that is most timely received. Just to save me a little bit of ciphering. Indeed. And with her own challenge, Carol Baker, the one and only, the Supreme Empress of Hooterville, just said, you know, I started out as a guest on this program, and now I'm family. Thanks for adopting me. And sent along $100. She said, tell the Hornedanistas, I'm issuing a challenge. Pony up. And this will all be monumentally helpful because, of course, the fundraising goal this evening, odd cents notwithstanding, was $522.62. So if we can knock that down, we will be back to even as we close the week. Meanwhile, Jeremy with a note says, it's weeks and days like today I miss and yearn for Mr. Stress's input. Long live the Horn, and long live Bill's memory. And we've got folks to memorialize in all of this. 10 years we'll see things like that. I think about our buddy Clyde from WD40.com. That would have been 2008, right around Halloween, right around this time. And, of course, our dear friend Maura, she who lived through the toxic filth of 9/11 and had her ability to breathe taken away from her. And yet one of her last acts on Earth was to call the program and bid adieu to the Horn Family Commune Congregation. Indeed, indeed. And Miss Alice, who listened for so long up in Northern California, we remember them all. And Carol's challenge also qualifies within the universe of Tom's challenge because it did come in as a nice round multiple of 10. So thank you. And that also goes along let's see here. I'm just trying to keep up with the details. That goes along with another contribution marking the anniversary. Another nice round multiple of 10. From our good friend and longtime supporter, Randy. So we're actually on a nice roll relative to Tom's round it up challenge, with $100 to go on that, and then Carol's challenge as well. So we could actually get caught up and maybe get more in Monday, Horn Birthday Part 2, which will be the 26th. Of October, which would be magnificent. And I'm reminded also that yes, we have lost some members of our family, but along the way, we've had little baby Horn Denistas born. Indeed, indeed we have. And just here in this space, I've watched a family grow up and, you know, fly away from the nest. Pretty amazing, all in all. And it all began with a vision and a dream. It began with Gina. I don't know what Boss Man Wayne's up to this evening. I don't know if he recalls that this is the anniversary. But it was Gina's vision to build a progressive radio infrastructure that he followed through on after Gina left us far too soon. So just a few things to note along the way. And thank you one and all. Nice little group beginning to gather together in the chat room. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Mighty Mouse. Good evening, Roger. And good evening, Will in Chicago. All capably moderated by the inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who has been here for many almost as long as almost as long as the horn itself, and it being Friday, we'll celebrate this particular birthday with our Friday on the Front Porch gang. We'll get that all started in a little bit of time. It's a matter of timing. See who all wants to jump in. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, you are welcome to. Please remember, all you got to do is send a contact request, if you never have before, to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype, Sparky Dunk. And, well, you'll be right there and part of the ongoing extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. And as we take note of the people who have made all of this happen, I would be severely remiss, as Randy reminds me, if I did not mention Ben Birch. Ben, of course, was the one with the vision to create the infrastructure for the live streaming. Up until the horn came along, Ben wasn't really streaming anything live, you know, directly through the White Rose Society. And bang, there we went. So thank you, Ben Birch. Along the way, we lost a dear friend in Judy Bonds. Again, another one of those visionaries who saw the necessity of getting a message out and maintaining a message. And it was she who saw to it that Cold River Mountain Watch was for a very long time an active financial sponsor. Well, not a sponsor so much as just, you know, messaging support. Yeah, it's been quite amazing, really. So don't let anybody ever tell you that bake sale radio can't work. Just because we're not running ads for herbal remedies that'll give a 99-year-old man a stiffy, or the vacuum cleaner that'll pick up a bowling ball, that doesn't make it any less real. And that's it's a beautiful thing that's happened here. You know, Air America came and went. There was a time when Air America was hemorrhaging $80,000 a day. A day. And we were running on a shoestring. We've had amazing hosts on this program. I think of Peter Godbold. Peter, who was out there doing a radio program that was a brilliant liaison from the gay community to the wider progressive community. Long before there was any such thing in the for-profit media. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Joe Vecchio. John Fox hosted his own program for a good long while. I mean, there was a time when we were doing, I think, just two, maybe three, 4 hours short per day of as much original programming as what Air America was doing, hemorrhaging $80,000 a day. That's pretty amazing. And, in addition to hosting his own show, John Fox kept me sane for a very long time, just teaching me the finer points of getting all of this equipment to cooperate. And periodically, I still run screaming to him. And we've got some work yet to do. There's a huge retool on the studio going on. Bike Gata in the chat room asks, Air America hemorrhaged $80,000 a day? Oh, yes, it did. It really, really did. And that's why it didn't work. You know, we've even We've even seen members of the Horn community grow up and go off to achieve amazing things, go off to college. We watched Cassie's academic adventure as it unfolded, and shucks, I guess she's in her second year of law school now. Amazing. And that all arose out of a conversation that started in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. So happy anniversary, happy birthday, one and all. You did this. You have helped create this community. You have made this a reality. And for that, I am both gratified and to no small degree still quite amazed. Indeed, indeed. Let's see. Note coming in from Billable Rick. Kudos on the 10th anniversary of the Horn. You've outlasted not only Air America, but the redhead who disparagingly referred to your program as bake sale radio. Here's to another 10 years of the Horn. Signed, Billable Rick. Still standing. Mm-hmm. And among other things, you know, I remember saying early on, as we started all this, you know, I don't want to be Elvis. I want to be the Beatles. I want us to put together something where we will all bask in the accomplishment. And that is exactly what we've done. But, of course, the world stops and the news stops for no one. And so there is more than enough information to go around. I've been gone for the better part of the day. Ferg and I drove over to, we had an appointment to get his hearing tested. But before we hit the road, I was scanning social media and websites generally, and we spent a lot of time listening to the Benghazi hearing last night. And there seems to be a consensus that if it had been a boxing match, it would have been a reprise of Hillary Clinton in the guise of Muhammad Ali, standing over the prone form of Sonny Liston, ready to punch his lights out if he gets up off the canvas. Sonny Liston in this case would be Trey Gowdy. And my penchant for song parodies. And I got to think it because I think during the program last night, I remarked that the guy was sweating more than Richard Nixon in the presidential debates of the 1960 election cycle. Gowdy had the flop sweats. And the more I thought about it, the more wait a minute. And then I realized, and I don't know if anything came of it because I wasn't able to follow up on it. but it suddenly occurred to me that sweats like a Dick Nixon scans with walk like an Egyptian. Sweats like a Dick Nixon. Yeah. Might have to work on that. I think it has potential. is there going to be, and surely there will be, because there's plenty of election cycle left, and Trey Gowdy doesn't, Harold Gowdy, doesn't strike me as the kind of guy with enough sense to not go back in to get pummeled some more. So I'm sure there will be more of these, although I don't think they get another shot at Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. Ugh, what a mess that was. And the general goings-on in the world, are you following this storm coming ashore in Mexico? It's a brute. I learned about it earlier, didn't mention it, didn't find a time to mention it, but one of the most powerful Eastern Pacific storms since they began recording data. Isn't that the case? Rains that might extend up into Texas. Do I have that right? And it turns out that, bless his heart, Senator Sanders is calling for congressional investigations of Exxon, but that's probably not going to happen because, Exxon wouldn't appreciate it if the people that it's given so much money to turned around and investigated them for, creating the entire climate change denial industry. As Carol notes in regard to the hearings yesterday, she said, "The love of my life, who doesn't generally say funny things on purpose, just told me, watching Hillary Clinton trying to educate the Republicans was like watching Anne Bancroft in The Miracle Worker." Water, Helen, it has a name. Oh, yeah. Carol says, "When they can turn my gentleman farmer into a stand-up comedian." Well, that's how you know how bad it was. An 11-hour fishing expedition, and just rumbling through my head in a constant a 3-hour tour, a 3-hour tour. Why? It was an 11-hour tour, and I mean, why couldn't Trey Gowdy have just wound up marooned on some island pedaling a coconut a bamboo bicycle with coconut shell pedals? God. I figure we should probably deal with this one. You may have seen it somewhere before already, but you remember the lady who screamed Islamic? Yeah, and we've got her and Opal Covey rubbing the dust off her feet like a cat leaving its litter box. These people are beginning to pile up. Speak American. Well, now we have Purity Mom. Mm-hmm. Out in the wilds of far Nebraska, some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christians are all kinds of upset. Why? Because schools in Nebraska offer and have been offering an elective class that no one is ever forced to take in sex education. Comprehensive sex education. So the other night, more than 1,000 people turned out at a school board parent meeting. This is Tuesday evening. And they were there to stop the elective class in sex education. among other things, one guy showed up because he had done been told that Nebraska said sex education class was gonna teach different masturbation techniques. No, really. That would be parent Bernie Garcia. Different Bernie. He had a sign outside the building that says, "Say no to comprehensive sex, Ed." Because they're going to be teaching our little children different sex positions and how to masturbate. I mean, we'll have to be subscribing to that Dollar Shave Club for like 10, 12 razors a month just to keep their palms shaved down from the hair that's going to grow. Oh, my God. Of course, never mind that the out there in Omaha, they're not going to teach anything. No such thing. But this is the kind of crap that gets ginned up on right-wing radio and right-wing blog posts and right-wing Facebook pages. When asked about his concerns, Bernie Garcia said, "That's disgusting. That's not right. Children should learn about sex when they become adults." Now, Omaha is the closest thing that Nebraska has to being even remotely urbanized. But still, we're talking about kids who are not that far removed from the farm. Kids tend to figure out sex, especially kids that have any kind of an agricultural background. They figure out sex pretty quick, and they're generally not adults when they do figure it out. And as for masturbation techniques, well, you know, it's really a matter of personal preference, isn't it? I mean, some will go at it until they go blind, and others until they just only have to squint one eye. Now, mind you, STD rates are on the rise in places like Nebraska because of things like abstinence-only policies and the fact that we don't teach children that they live in a world now where you can die from having sex. Yeah. A few reasonable people showed up. Speaking to WDAM-TV, Jordan Del Mundo said, "There's been a lot of news about increased STD rates. We're seeing increased rates of HIV in young people. They're not being well prepared. And isn't it our responsibility as citizens to prepare them to be healthy adults?" Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jay Irwin is a University of Nebraska at Omaha professor. He showed up for the hearing. He said, "I think all in all, I feel so scared and sad for the young people who are the children of some of these parents, whether they were present or not, or their congregants at some of the churches that the adults attend. There's no doubt some of these kids are LGBTQ. They were given a very clear message from their parents and at least a segment of their community tonight, and that message is just flat out wrong." Because, see, that was the other thing that was getting the upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Bible-thumping, Bible-humping, Christ-centered Christians all upset, that there was going to be mention of, wait for it, homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And this is also a wider dispute within right-wingistan. You remember the name Peter LaBarbara? I know. It sounds like a drag queen name, but still. Well, Peter LaBarbara is all upset with that Well, what was he, the dean or the president or the exalted grand pish-posh of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, Al Mohler. He got the book coming out. Yeah, remember the book we were talking about? This is the book where he tells parents and friends of gay people who are getting married that they can't go to their homosexual weddings if you're an upstanding God-fearing Bible-believing Christ-centered Christian. Snake handling, strychnine swigging, floor rolling, tongue speaking, etc. Well, Peter LaBarbera is downright pissed with Al Mohler for writing that. Because in Peter LaBarbera's world, he has acknowledged that homosexual people exist. And in Peter LaBarbera's world, they don't.
You know, it seems like there's been a slow retreat, and we're always backing up. That's my problem with Christians in this culture war. We're always backing up. Al Mohler has given credence to the idea of a homosexual sexual orientation.
Yes.
Now, we know that sexual...
He's talking to Janet Mefford, and let me just say that I really, really enjoy it when people, when homophobes and bigots, because, you know, the goddess of irony watches them very closely, give interviews and start talking about backing up. Peter LaBarbera. Mad at Al Mohler.
Orientation is a political construct. It's something that's helped the homosexual movement advance, because if people feel that they just, that people who struggle with homosexuality have a natural so-called orientation, they of course believe that they're not really responsible for their behavior as much as they would be for any other sin. And so once again, we start treating this particular sin as a special sin, needing all sorts of special terminology and semantics and caveats that are not biblical. And I think he's starting to go down that route, and it troubles me because he's probably regarded as the leading intellectual, or one of them, in the evangelical Christian movement.
Right.
Yeah, which I find hilarious that there's anybody who would even remotely qualify for the title of leading intellectual in the evangelical movement. But no, really, Peter LaBarbera, if that's not a drag queen name, really, what is? Peter LaBarbera is mad because he doesn't think homosexuality is real. He thinks people just wake up one morning and, you know, some guy just wakes up and says, you know, I'm not going to, or some woman wakes up and says, No, because it's all just politics. It's not sexuality. There's no such thing as human sexuality. Just say no. Right? Yeah. Which gets me back to Omaha. Because, this is a sound clip for the ages. It's just a few seconds long. This is Purity Mom, who was one of the about 1,000 people in the audience, not all of whom were weirdos, but Purity Mom is. You know, it occurs to me that maybe the best way to, maybe these Purity Moms and evangelical fundamentalists and so abstainers and what, maybe they're right. Maybe we just don't teach children about sexuality at all, and then the children can learn about it when they become child parents, because that's so good for America. Right. Get the hockey puck. A little cowbell, because this is special. This audio is yummy. This audio is delightful. Purity Mom just flat out lost it. Stood up and whoo, glory, started a screaming.
Keep saying it.
Yeah, you got that? She's got five daughters. And nobody's going to keep them pure. Mm-hmm. My daughter. My daughter. Who's going to keep her pure? Nobody. Nobody. I am. Not OPS. Not OPS. 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 Eep op. Orc. Never mind. We played that last week. Who's going to keep her pure? Nobody. I am. So is she saying she's nobody? Or maybe she's off her meds? Or... And then there's that whole purity notion. Because it's kind of icky. All the focus tends to go on the young females and not on the young males in that instance. Sexual purity is something for girls. You know, because of the sin of Eve and all of that. And remember, this is Nebraska, where they do some pretty obscene things to, you know, like bulls to collect semen samples. I know, dinner hour in some places. Sorry. But, I mean, you know how they do that, right? According to our resident expert Iowegian, Carol, they shove something that looks like a giant dildo up the bull's butt. And it emits a small electrical charge that makes the bull ejaculate. Apparently they do this in Missouri, too. Carol says that the love of her life would never let me be present for the procedure. I bugged him to death about it, and he finally told me. All men who witness the procedure get an erection and stand around pretending no other men present that don't have the same erection. And then they all think about gay sex and wonder if they'd like it. No shit. She says, my honey is very honest. Well, looks like pretty good time. Meanwhile, email coming in. Jim, subject line, masturbation. Remember, you don't have to look your best. Oh, I knew this would bring out the high-quality commentary. What did Woody Allen say? I know, Woody Allen. But what did he say? I remember my first sexual experience. I was alone at the time. Yeah. Roger in Oregon says, parents that object to clinically taught sex education, these are the parents that don't want their kids to know that it's not normal for fathers and other family members to be touching and teaching them the sexication in the homeschool ways they've been a-doing for years. I wasn't even thinking about that angle. But now I am. Because, yeah, you might go into sex ed class and they'd say, no, nobody should be touching you there without your consent, boys and girls. What do you mean? Uncle Daddy's been doing that for years. Right. Jay Cruzen, subject line, masturbation. Bob, I was going to send this over the weekend for Moran Monday, but what the hell? Use it now or then or never. And the now, then, or never in question. Well, you just don't get headlines like this every day. These are the kind of headlines that kind of let you, they write the program for us. Headline via Now 8 News. Please be a joke. No. News 8 Louisiana. Quick, somebody please look up News 8 Louisiana and just tell me that this is a parody site, because I desperately need it to be. Woman arrested for masturbating with Jimmy Dean sausage in Walmart bathroom. Police are calling this a crime of the unthinkable, something that most people would never imagine doing. On Monday, police were called to a Louisiana Walmart under the suspicion that a customer was shoplifting food. According to the complaint, a Walmart worker radioed security about a suspicious woman in the meat aisle. Security cameras filmed 33-year-old Shaniqua Johnson shoving sausages under her shirt. Closed-circuit television footage then shows the woman walking to the bathroom where she remained at least 30 minutes. No, this can't be real. This cannot be real. No. No, it can't be. I don't think I can stand to live in a world where it is. Because other headlines on this site include several injured in zombie-like attack at Tennessee Walmart as man tries to eat his victims. No. FDA confiscates several thousand chickens from KFC farms as mutations worsen. Can't be real. Can't be real. Just that no. 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 If it is real, Jay Cruzen notes, what gets me is they charged her with indecent exposure. If they'd left her alone, no one should have been exposed. I think she can get off as far as that charge is concerned. No. Just no. No. Meanwhile, a note coming in from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansastan. Subject line, don't tell Omaha people that the very famous, incredibly beautiful silent film star Louise Brooks from Cherryvale, Kansas, is quoted as saying that she believed masturbation to be an art form. Amazing what kind of people come from Kansas. What's the matter with Omaha? To coin a phrase. Omaha. That's nice. I didn't know about Louise Brooks. See, that's the other fun thing about doing this for 10 years. You learn all kinds of cool stuff along the way. Really. Under the subject line, how to keep your daughter pure, Robert in Australia writes, how to keep your daughter pure. 1. Chastity belts from age of 7. See Mad Max Fury Road. Do I have to? Mel Gibson's not in that, is he? Might be safe. 2. Burqa to be worn whenever the daughter leaves the house. Must be escorted by male relative. 3. No sex education. If you tell them about it, they'll do it. Or if you tell them about it, they might think that they've got some degree of, sovereignty over their own body. And we, by God, most assuredly cannot have that. No. And, can somebody please explain to me what it is about these right-wingers who have to, shine up their credentials in order to be right-wing enough? Because I'm kind of, the fake CIA guy the other day, the guy who held himself out as a CIA analyst. Yeah. Well, here we go again. So this thing all develops, according to the folks over at the Friendly Atheist, when a U.S. Army vet is in attendance at a convocation event at Jerry Falwell University. You know, Liberty. Liberty University. Sit, Liberty, sit. Good boy. So anyway, the vet was looking around. I wonder if this was at the Bernie convocation. Anyway, a guy with kind of salt and pepper, graying hair, was wearing a military dress uniform and a whole bunch of decorative hardware going down the left side of his jacket. The vet in question thought that it looked kind of not really possible to have that many decorations. Well, the highly decorated individual in question was identified as Mark Joston. The insignia on his uniform marked him out as a Navy SEAL with four Purple Hearts, an Afghanistan and Iraq veteran, and a Rear Admiral for the CIA Special Ops. Right? Well, his name is not Mark Joston. That would have been Pastor, Brother, Minister, Reverend George Hunley from Louisa, Virginia Stan. Michael Swaney at Popular Military said, this guy made a big mistake by putting on that Navy Cross if he did not earn it, because there are only a dozen or so who have earned the Distinguished Navy Cross during the War on Terror. There is no Mark Joston or Joston to be found on any list of Navy Cross recipients. However, there are three unidentified Navy SEALs who earned the cross during the Global War on Terrorism, so we cross-referenced his name with the Navy Silver Star recipients, and there's no Mark Joston, O-N, or Joston, E-N. And then the putting two and two together and adding 12 and carrying five went on. And lo and behold, Pastor, Brother, Reverend, Minister, George Hunley, he's got a little bit of a history. Back in February, Raw Story reported on an incident whereby George Hunley, minister of the gospel, the saving grace gospel of Jesus Christ, told this big old whopper to the local constabulary about how he'd been robbed, and then he'd been shot at by a interracial couple. He'd pulled over on the side of the road to try and assist him. Well, it turned out that was all a bunch of baloney, too. Police looked everywhere, couldn't find any evidence that Hunley had, for starters, been shot. And then they also found his wallet and his checkbook that he declared had been taken from him during the robbery by the interracial couple. I don't get it. I mean, is this like some sort of a... Is it psychosexual with these right-wingers? I mean, is this guy just deeply mentally disturbed and desperately needs help? Or is it another case that we'll just let most anybody get by with most anything? As long as they're claiming to be a minister of the gospel. Mm-hmm. Hard to know. But again, it's Virginia Stan, Jake. And you might just want to forget it. Because, well... Oh, wait. We've got an update coming in on the Jimmy Dean sausage story. Carol says, a frozen sausage? 30 minutes? In her hoo-ha? Yeah, I don't think so. Not for a half an hour. Yeah, Todd updating says, you know, it doesn't take a detective to tell you this story is a fake story. Well, that's no, I had all kinds of bells and whistles going off, from the racial stereotype of calling an African-American woman Shaniqua to a male security guard entering a women's restroom an act Walmart would never allow due to the legal implications. It's clear this is a bogus story. Plus, it comes from Now 8 News, which is known as a bogus news site that often reports about crazy stories, many of which happen at a Walmart. In fact, they were recently debunked in a story about a woman who was arrested at a Walmart for allegedly sampling tampons in the feminine hygiene aisle. Okay, good. You heard it. Yeah. This can't be real. This can't be real. This can't be real. And this one, on the other hand, is a real story. From Jenny in Wisconsin, she says, this is not a joke, from my aunt's local paper. The new assessor's name is Mari Negro. She said, but this is like something out of Blazing Saddles. The Marinette and Menominee Eagle Herald, Thursday, October 22nd, 2015, that would be yesterday. Negro hired as city assessor. Now, you know, that there are places in Wisconsin where, you know, it's Alabama. That's why the Alabama GOP invited Scott Walker down to address their Lincoln Day dinner and said, why a feller from Wisconsin? Because Scott Walker has Alabama values, and he truly does. So over there in Marinette, Menominee, readers of the Eagle Herald picked up the paper yesterday, and Emery and Marveline, well, they about plumb fell over. Back to Virginia, and the you know, brother, reverend, pastor, who made up the story about being robbed by that interracial couple.
Yeah, well,
they're still working things out in Virginia. I mean, after all, Virginia gave us Jim Webb, a recent Democratic presidential candidate, now former Democratic presidential candidate, who is contemplating an independent run, and, you know, Confederate flag apologist. Yeah. Well, also in Virginia, you know, it's football season. It's college football season. NFL professional football season, high school football season. It is football season. And so it was that the squad from a local high school showed up to play the Glen Allen High School football team at their homecoming game. The visiting team was made up primarily of African-American boys. Glen Allen High School is in Richmond, Virginia, by the way. You know, Richmond, where out on I-95 there's a giant Confederate flag flying on private property by the highway. Because freedom. And so, an outfit called the Red Bar Radio Show produced a song parody. And they played it. It was played for about 15 seconds as the visiting team warmed up. The lyrics? I hate effing N-words. N-words suck a dick. Look at N-words trying to raise money, but they can't because they spend all their money. They're N-words, and they're so fucking N-words, I hate them. That's some poetry. Now, with the horse long gone out of the barn and the bell already rung, Glen Allen High School principal Gwen Miller worked desperately to find a way out of the brutal insult that they had foisted upon John Marshall High School. Glen Allen High School principal Gwen Miller said, "We regularly review playlists, and I am at a loss as to how such a song was included. Please know this unfortunate incident does not reflect the broader Glen Allen High School community. We are a diverse and inclusive community and are appalled that the instigator of this event has sent a message contrary to our beliefs and practices." So apparently the review of the playlist kind of failed that evening. Because, what, she got a Confederate somewhere and then, yeah. That particular word occurs 13 times in 1 minute. And it is claimed that it was played for about 15 seconds. The John Marshall High School players were stunned, to say the least. Although I'm not entirely sure, you know, why. And so, lo and behold, we have gotten to the end of the first hour of this 10th anniversary broadcast. And thanks to Carol and Randy, two of the $300 challenge issued by Tom in the Bay Area have been matched. Remember, that's the Rounded Up Challenge. Tom will match the first $300 that come in, but the $300 has to come in. And would prefer it. Tom wants it, in order to qualify for the challenge, it has to come in nice round multiples of 10 that do not require me to do any ciphering on the air whatsoever. So it awaits you. And hopefully we will get where we need to be, maybe get even a little bit further. That would be lovely because Carol couched hers in terms of a challenge as well. And so after we've met the Roundup Challenge, well, just to quote Carol, let me get this right. After Tom's challenge has been met, Carol says, if they want to torture you with odd change for another 10 years, well, give. And all kidding aside, we've got a ton of bills. This is one of those particularly brutal months. Among other things, when everything went sideways with Frontier a couple of months ago, and we had to go to the metered bandwidth, well, that added to things a little bit. But there's good news. We now have a static IP line installed here, and that's kind of important. Because it has to do with gizmos and boxes and stuff that are going to go, you know, relative to the whole subbing for our good friend Mike Malloy part. Had to have a static IP. found out something new. If you want a static IP, you have to order it up. A static IP costs, for the same service, roughly three times as much. So, oh, goody. But we got it. We absolutely got it. And Roger out in Oregon says, subject line, the multiple facets behind the Walmart sausage story. First level is, of course, to add another racist insult and make it memorable by including sexual imagery. Second level was to reward their sponsor, the sausage maker, with the inference that the product could, under the right circumstances, be satisfying. But the real tertiary level reason is to lay the foundation for removing meat from the WIC program, because they just use it for perverted stuff, you know? Yeah, see, we identified that story pretty quickly. On the other hand, Louis Asparagus Gohmert, I expect him to be outraged by this on the floor of the House, you know, any day now. Any day at all. Interracial couple, says Marty. Going back to the Virginia story. Time Lord and human? Vulcan and Andorian? Cardassian and Bajoran? Please, no Cardassians. Oh, wrong Cardassians. Yeah. You know, when that whole thing started, I thought, Cardassians? Is there a new Star Trek franchise? If only. All right, then. Let's fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, if you wish. Of course, there are multiple ways to participate. The Horn Molloy Skype chat group is the easiest on Skype. Just, if you've never done it before, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, on Skype, and he'll get you going right away. And you'll be part of this rollicking good time. But we also maintain the stress line, named in honor and memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, and that is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Mm-hmm. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. And, of course, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. Bob Kincaid on Facebook, and then there's our closed group, Head On Radio Network, on Facebook. So, work it out however you wish. Oh, let's see. What would a... Yeah, I think... I think Randy had the right idea for a bumper here. This is The Horn, listener-supported conversation radio, 10 years old. I'm Bob Kincaid. No, that's not that. Let's try this. Not that either. All right, can't be that difficult. There it is.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. You never take advice. Someday you'll pay the price. I know. I've seen it before. It happens all
You know, sometimes Foreigner comes in really, really handy. We could have just immediately backed this with Dirty White Boy for whoever wrote that pathetic attempt at news satire. Yeah, but we didn't because, well, I'm merciful that way. This is The Horn. This is our 10th anniversary, and it happens to fall on a Friday on the front porch, which is really, really nifty. And let's, I tell you what, before I go over to the Skype line for the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, let me check in here. I suspect, is that you, Kevin?
Yes, it is.
Well, it's just been a while since we heard from you. I'm awfully glad to.
Yep, I've been listening, but this being the political silly season, that's kind of...
Is that silly season or sewage season? I think it could qualify either way.
Well, yeah, either way, but when you got how many Republican candidates for president now running with no realistic chance of winning and we can't vote till... Oh, April of next year?
Yeah, and see, this is the, I mean, Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee stuck around for a little while, and then they said, goodbye now. But Piyush Jindal is still in the race. George Pataki has maybe the support of, like, Mrs. Pataki?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it, Kevin, because it's a better grift on the Republican side to be a presidential candidate?
I'm assuming because Lincoln Chafee had the sense to get out, and even though Jim Webb really wasn't a Democrat, he had the sense to get out. Although I did hear him mention something about he might run as an independent. So... take that for what that's worth.
And draw votes from who?
Himself. You know, you get one vote, you can always brag that, hey, I got a vote for president.
I think I've had one of those. I mean, it was a write-in or something, but yeah.
Yeah, so, you know. Seriously, it's just... I wouldn't say it depresses me, it just frustrates me. Listening to those hearings yesterday, I got a little bit engaged on Twitter about them, but realistically, how many times has they investigated Secretary Clinton now? And they've come up to the exact same book that they have.
Well, I mean, they've been investigating her since it became clear that Bill Clinton was going to be the nominee back in 1992.
Oh, yeah. And I made the prediction on Twitter, and I hope to go back to it in 2017. If she does indeed become president, I'm predicting that on the day after she is sworn in, they will open up impeachment here based on...
Well, Mo Brooks has already said that from, what is that, the Alabama 5th Congressional District?
Yep. Yeah, and they wonder why people are tuning out. Even, you know, it was said by me, it was said by numerous people yesterday on Twitter, this is the best thing Hillary Clinton could get. She can't get this kind of campaign funding. The Republicans are doing it all for her. And, you know, you got Trey Gowdy up there answering the questions for her, and she just, you know, sits there and says thank you very much to herself, I'm sure. I'm still a Bernie person. I won't be anything other than a Bernie Sanders person unless he drops out. But, you know, I have no tolerance for stupidity when it comes to the Republican Party, and apparently that's all that comes with the Republican Party these days. So anyway, that's kind of why I've been silent for a few months here is I've listened. I had the pleasure of listening last week when you had the woman speaking to the legislator in tongues as he was trying to usher her out the door.
Opal. I will never forget her name, I don't think. Opal Covey of Toledo, who has called for Toledo to be destroyed by fire, I think, if she's not elected high priestess mayor.
Well, you know, the thing that struck me about her was the fact that she kept saying God would do this and that to him because he tried to kick her out of the office or whatever, and he's still there. So, you know, I'm a little bit puzzled.
I know, Kevin, but it's kind of a delight, isn't it? Well, we're awfully glad to have you on board. Let me bring on the Horn Malloy Skype chat group as well. Good evening, Sparky.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I was going to say, how's the new birthday age feeling?
Same as before. We're just another year older, I guess.
But apparently, life is tolerable. Well, you can't moderate the group from the man cave, but.
Well, I could try it some night, but I just haven't.
Well, I just noticed you've been folding space a little bit more lately.
Oh, well, the weather's not real nice. I mean, it's been, 80 degrees, it's cooling off now. I mean, we're going to have a week of 70s.
So is that thing that was slamming into the western Mexican coast, is that an El Nino phenomenon?
That's what I've heard.
Because if one of those things gets froggy and goes a little further north, things could get... Because even in Mexico, they were talking about expecting... And another humongous storm hit Guatemala the week before. Mudslides, more than 100 people buried alive, I read. Mudslides Southern California does not need.
No. They were still digging somebody out the other day, a car out, to see if there was a body in it the other day.
God almighty.
I read on the news.
So at what point in time do we, like, get to, I'm with Bernie. At some point in time, you think we could have an 11-hour hearing with the CEO of ExxonMobil to find out about, them covering up climate change? Or actually the science behind climate change? Climate change has gone on and happened, but,
Well, he wants the Attorney General to get involved with it first. But he'd like to have a hearing, but you can't call a hearing unless you are a Republican.
Exactly.
I've got one for you. You ever heard of this guy has named it Ranger Ghazi?
No.
Congressman Steve Russell, he's retired out of the Army. He thinks those three women that went through the Ranger school got special treatment.
Yeah.
So I just saw a op-ed in my local paper this guy wrote. And I put a list in there, but it's gone into several papers around the country. I can't find nothing else on it at the moment, but if you read that op-ed, he's bitching about it.
Well, that clown show was astonishing, and Martha Roby established a new career for herself, got herself some national notoriety over that whole "Were you alone? Yes, I was alone. Are you sure you was alone?" And Hillary laughed at. I don't see what you're laughing at. I don't think that's funny at all. I don't understand what's funny. Well, you are, ma'am, you are.
The one I hated, it was Jim Jordan.
He's a jerk.
I kept wondering, what is your point? What are you trying to get after? I just about ready to kick the computer screen.
Well, but the best part of it was right after it was all over, and somebody stuck a microphone in Harold Gowdy's face and said, "So did you learn anything new today?" Did you see what his complicated answer was, Sparky? Was his answer. I mean, isn't that kind of the same sort of noise that you make when your back's on the canvas and you're not sure just exactly where you are?
Well, did you see that picture of him standing? They go over and they shake the hands of that whoever they were witnessing. He was just standing there looking off into space. Hillary was shaking the hand of Cummings or something off to the other side. He just looked like totally, glad that's over.
The best description of Harold Trey Gowdy came from Texas T, who said, "He sweats like a wax dummy." And if you've ever been to a wax museum, the image was just perfect.
No, I can't say that I have.
It was.
Well, the lights make them sweat.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, there wasn't Elijah Cummings wasn't flop sweating, and he was sitting there right next to him. But I'll tell you what,
but he's one of those.
He can take the heat better. But honest to God, I mean, Gowdy's from South Carolina. I mean, there's lots of charter boats leave Charleston Harbor every day. I'd have thought he could have got an 11-hour fishing expedition for something less than $4 million.
Yeah, but the next one is getting started, too, with the Planned Parenthood. Isn't Marsha going to be the...
Oh, goodness! You mean Marsha Blackburn?
Marsha Blackburn going to be the chairman.
Oh, I'm going to... Yeah, I'll have several opportunities to say, goodness! Ugh. Well, let's check in. Carol Baker's in the room. Good evening, Carol.
Hattie, how are you?
Just dandy. Thanks for popping by.
Well, I figured after that rather graphic description of extracting bull semen, I should stop by and say hello.
I had no idea.
Well, I didn't either. I couldn't figure out why he was just... I was like, well, the vet's coming in. I'll be down to help. No, we got it.
Well, that's like the rules that were in place for years in Pompeii. There are places in Pompeii where there are filthy murals of men with their really humongous penises, and women were forbidden to go in. Yeah.
But the thing that made that story so funny is like, you're having this conversation in Nebraska. All farm kids learn about sex from the farm animals. And let me tell you something. Farm animals do really gay shit.
Really now?
Really now?
Yes. Yes.
I got to see some firsthand the other night.
Farm animals doing gay shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two cows.
Right out in the pasture.
And right out in front of Jesus?
Yeah. There's about 40 cows, and they're all artificial inseminated.
Yeah, we got a little echo cooking through here.
Okay, it's gone now.
Cool. David in South Carolina stand with regard to Martha Roby of Alabama said, "Why didn't that Bama stand killbot wash her hair? Is that against the rules, or is she in some Jesus cult that forbids hair washing, or is that just a Bama stand thing in her province of Bama stand? She can't even be a Fox girl with that dark greasy hair." Trey Gowdy of the SCGOP intelligentsia. Oh my God!
Didn't she have penciled in eyebrows too?
Well, I really didn't look that long because I didn't want to turn to stone or anything, but I do know that she reminded me all of a sudden, and I put this out there on social media last night. She reminded me of a line from a Paul Simon song. You remember that there in "You Can Call Me Al," he says, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and hints and allegations. Well, she was all about hints and allegations. And then that immediately took me to, he ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. And then when I saw it, yeah, I looked at, yep, that would be your roly-poly little bat-faced girl.
Roly-poly little bat-faced girl.
You could have given me warnings, Bob. I just about choked on a drink of beer.
Oh, you've got a beer?
Well, yeah.
That's cheating.
It's Friday.
I got to wait till 9 o'clock.
Who said?
Oh, it's that personal oath I swore about never doing Limbaugh Radio. Besides,
really?
Ain't
are
got
you
going to
get soused on one beer?
Oh,
I feel so bad, Bob. Billable Rick here. I've got to wait till my everybody else leaves in the office before I pop open mine. I've got a nice pumpkin ale I'm just thinking about from Kennebunkport, Maine.
Oh, my God. Really the pumpkin cult has gotten you too.
Yeah, it's called KBC. It got it at Trader Joe's. It's really good. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. It's got a nice, real nice flavor, so...
Well,
I'll enjoy it while we still can enjoy pumpkins, right?
Well, yeah. So tell me, California geography lesson. Where is Lagunitas?
Lagunitas is, I think, in Orange County. It's probably near Laguna Beach, is my guess. I'm thinking, just based on the name.
Well, apparently they brew beer there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because over at my favorite little hangout in Fayetteville, the Secret Sandwich Society. They presently have an impression on a classic Czech pils from Lagunitas Brewing, and it are right tasty.
You know, I think I've had some of their beers before. They're very good. It's one of those small craft breweries that have been set up in Southern California probably in the last 20 years or so, You know, there's others as well. I a lot of the ones I get, it's called Joseph's Brow. It's out of San Jose, and they sell a variety of like European craft beers that I like to get at Trader Joe's. You know, including that they have like Heffy, they have Kolsch, they have all kinds of stuff. Czech, Viennese, all sorts of good beers. You know, so. I'll have to look at that Lagunitas. That's the city in California, or that's the name of the brewery, Bob?
Oh, okay. Name of the brewery is what? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think that's based in San Diego. If memory serves.
Well, they managed to get it all the way to West Virginia, Stan, and it is right tasty.
Awesome.
Oh, the echo's back.
It's coming from you, Bob.
Can't be.
I suspect it's coming from me because I'm on an iPad.
Check. No.
It's gone.
Hmm.
I guess it's a 10th anniversary goblin that's invaded. Yeah,
exactly. That's our 10th anniversary. Puka. We are talking about beer, after all. Drift Glass, David in South Carolina turned me on, and David's been with us for a very, very long time, too, going all the way back to the bad old days of terrestrial radio. Drift Glass did a piece, Final Update at the Hillary Clinton Hearing.
Hello.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, I heard you talking beers, and I had to chime in since I, and I know that is nowhere near as important as the Hillary Clinton stuff, but I heard you talking about Lagunitas and all that. And
which turns out, by the way, to be an unincorporated community in Marin County.
Yeah, they're famous for various pale ales. There's a Lagunitas IPA. There's a Lagunitas called something something, which is a pretty good bitter hoppy beer. They're actually probably kind of graduated from being a craft brewery because they actually have two locations, and they're on either coast. There's in Ohio, Columbus has a really good brewery, Columbus Brewing Company. There's one out of near Pittsburgh called Trogues Brewing Company, which is really, really good beer. There's one up in Kalamazoo, Michigan called Bell's Brewery, which is actually one of my favorites.
Are you a big hophead, Steve?
I'm not. I mean, it depends. Some of them I can stand. I'm not an IPA. I like more the stouts and the porters. And even I can stand a mead now and again. It's a little on the sweet side, but it's really high on the alcohol content. I like the Russian Imperial stouts. But a lot of that stuff is, they're more winter beers because they're so heavy. It's not unusual to get a stout that's, I think the highest content I ever saw was a 14%, a Russian Imperial. And I can't remember I think the brand might be, it's called Three Brothers or Two Brothers or something like that, which is a really good one. But Oregon is traditionally one of the most populated areas for craft beers, but they're growing. I mean, it's a big craze really all over the U.S. There's actually a really good one in New Orleans called Abita.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with Abita.
Yeah,
and they do one called Purple Haze.
Yes, I was just thinking about. I could just picture the bottle. There's one in which is probably, there was actually a craft beer show, I believe it was on Discovery, and it's in not Newark but Newark, Delaware, called Dogfish Head.
And
Dogfish Head has a bunch of really interesting ones, and they have a brewmaster who's kind of on the cutting edge side, to the extent that you can be cutting edge with beer. And there was one of the more famous ones is a beer called Midas Touch. And it's a recipe that they found in some archaeological dig, I believe it was in Turkey. And I think it's around 2,000, 2,500 years old.
Well, Dogfish Head were the ones who also brewed the Pharaonic beer, too, Steve.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I remember you. I was just, as I'm sitting there, I was like, wait a minute, you you were talking about that at one point. And yeah, that's what it was.
Of course, there's a lovely brewery in upstate New York called Omegang.
Yes.
And I've had their the folks at Secret Sandwich have brought in their I think it's Three Philosophers.
Yes. Oh yeah, that's a really, really good one.
Yeah,
yes.
Malty, a little bit sweet, but with an ass kicking alcohol content to it. Yeah.
Yes. 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 Brooklyn has a really good one, but the Brooklyn Brewery has a really good lineup, and they actually have a really good pumpkin. Yes, I'm a pumpkin person too. They have a really good pumpkin.
God damn,
ale.
This is becoming like the invasion of the body snatchers. I mean,
yes,
my mouth is watering here, guys. I've got to go get that beer. I just can't hold it anymore. I hear my boss in the conference room next door, so I think I'll withhold that urge for now.
you might want to hold off just yet. Yeah. But
yeah,
Brooklyn also makes a dark chocolate stout. It's pretty heavy, but I like it a lot. I like the coffee stouts. There's a Japanese brewery called Hitachino that makes a number of really, really good beers, and they have an espresso stout, which I think about 7-8%. What's it? ABV. It's one of my favorites.
I have to be careful with the coffee stuff because Does caffeine? Yes. Caffeine can survive in it. It doesn't. It's not dissolved by alcohol or anything. The last thing you want is me with a beer in me, at the same time that the caffeine kicks in. Not a pretty moment.
But there's so many good beers out there, and the best thing about a good craft brewery is that. It's not, you don't have, you know, whereas Budweiser and all that crap is primarily a business. These smaller breweries are essentially guys who probably at one point were brewing beer in their bathtub, and they found out they were pretty good at it and liked doing it and said, well, hell, why don't I'd like to do this full time. I can make a living at it. And they opened up a business.
I've made many gallons of beer in the past thinking, you know, this would be really fun to do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I got relatively good at it, but that was about the I quit when the kids started getting older and messing with the airlocks.
Oh, yeah. No, I
hey,
hear you.
Steve. Yes. Does New York have a pretty? I'm sure they have a large number of craft breweries and pubs that like maybe even serve their own the beer that they themselves.
Yes.
Brew? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There's a brewery not too far from me. I live in the Bronx, and there's two breweries near me. There's a Bronx brewery that just started up, and there's one called a Gun Hill Brewery. And the neat thing about Gun Hill is it's kind of like it's a bar, and you walk in there, and the bar is like a big, an old big, like a warehouse or a big garage because its front door is a big, you know, like a big garage door. And you walk in, and to the left is the picnic tables and the bar, and straight ahead are the vats where the beers are. And Bronx Brewery is like that too. Brooklyn, I've never been to. There is also another one in Harlem called, you know, appropriately the Harlem Brewery. But there's a number of breweries out on Long Island, I believe, and there's a few. And Bob mentioned Umagong upstate. There's quite a few upstate, but New York has a number of them. The neat thing about like New York City is there are a lot of old speakeasies from Prohibition, kind of, you know, these little hole in the walls. There's actually a couple of them. You have to. They have like secret doors. I mean, it's not like exclusive or anything, but you got to know how to get there. And a lot of those places sell the craft brews. So yeah, there's stuff all over the place.
Now, does New York's extraordinarily pure water help contribute to the quality of the homegrown brews? Let's just say.
You know what? That's a really good question. I don't know about that. I actually. There's a bar in my neighborhood about a 5-minute walk from me that they have 15 different craft brews, and it rotates about every 3 days. Well, there was one of the bartenders there. He and the manager there had brewed it in there. They'd done their own brew, and actually, now that you say that, I think it was an IPA. One of them was an IPA that they had. It was really, really good. But you know, it's interesting. I don't know if that. Is a particular advantage of beers brewed in New York, but it would certainly make sense.
Now, do you have a favorite homegrown brew that you like to drink?
Well, I'm partial, and I'll tell you why I'm partial to it. There's a brewery, the one in Kalamazoo I mentioned, Bell's, is kind of what I'm partial to, and the reason is I actually go back to Columbus every Martin Luther King Day weekend to visit. Well, I visit my family who lives in Ohio, who lives in Dayton, but I have a friend of mine I stay with his wife and his two children in Columbus over that weekend. And there's a like a draft house that started this event. The first year they had it, they had Columbus Brewing Company and somebody else in. What they do is they do a beer tasting of about 12 beers, and then they show the Big Lebowski. And then they became teamed up with Bell's. So Bell's, every year Bell's is there. They taste 12 beers and then they show the Big Lebowski. And if you can actually, Google, it's called the Dude-a-thon. And, a guy from the Columbus Dispatch, which is the paper there one time, actually, wrote an article and mentioned me in the article because I come from New York to go there, and I come further than anybody, and it's just a really good time. People dress up like the various characters in the movie. It's a really good time. That's kind of why I'm partial to Bell's, and I think they have actually a really good lineup. They make a coffee brew, which was one of my favorites. They make a one called a Kalamazoo Stout, the name is the Kalamazoo Stout, which is one of my favorites. They have a couple that are kind of their flagship beers that if you look on various beer websites, one called Oberon, which is a lighter kind of a Pilsner beer. And then they have another one, which is an ale, kind of a pale ale called Two-Hearted Ale, which is actually a, again, I'm not into the ale so much, the pale ale so much, but that's actually a really tasty one. And I know they just started distributing, they were very regional in the Midwest. And Larry, who's Larry Bell, had just got up into New York, and I believe he might be in California. I'm not sure. I know for a fact that you could get it in West Virginia. Assuming the laws in West Virginia, I don't, you know, there's weird, every
well, it all depends. It all depends here on what the distributors are willing to bring in.
Gotcha.
And then that's a paperwork nightmare with the State Alcohol Beverage Control Board.
Bob, New York has some of the most effed up laws. Like, it's funny. You'll go to stores. Stores will sell liquor and wine, but you'll never get liquor, beer, and wine. So you have to sell liquor and wine or only beer.
Well, do you still have to go to like a specialized distributor in Pennsylvania just to get a beer? That always kind of blew my mind. You couldn't just walk in and, you know, buy a beer at 7-Eleven or something. There are these little, you know, hole in the wall distributorships, and that's where you have to go. But I would be remiss in all this delightful beer porn if I didn't mention my favorite, the folks at New Glarus up in Wisconsin, brewers of Spotted Cow and a host of other wonderful stuff. Can't get it. You can't get it outside Wisconsin. One of these days, I want to do a real world remake of Smokey and the Bandit. and just bring a tractor trailer full of New Glarus beer back to, you know, I'll share, you know, we'll stop and let off a few cases in Ohio and maybe West Virginia, Pennsylvania. Nothing like it.
You could use them as promotions to help with the donations, Bob, for the show.
Well, no, I don't think I could, Rick, because there were a couple of dudes who squirreled a couple of kegs of New Glarus across the line into Minnesota and got popped for felonies in the process.
Yeah, that's the only problem. You got a slight problem with criminal law there, you know, but... yeah.
Well, I got a story for you in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Wisconsin-based Lake Maid Beers recently announced plans to use an unmanned aircraft to deliver beer to fishermen out on the lakes. However, company president Jack Supple was informed by the FFA that it was a violation of law, which currently prohibits the commercial use of small drones. So anyway, they started a White House petition. This was over a year ago. It just happened to stumble on it when I was looking for something. Beer pitchers.
That's great. That's fantastic.
I'd rather have beer drones than, you know, Hellfire missile drones.
I was just thinking that too. I mean, maybe what he needs to do is repackage them as beer bombs, and then they'll let them do it.
I mean,
maybe if you bomb ISIS with you know, beer bombs, then, you know, they'll like mellow out. Who knows? Maybe not.
Lake Maid Beer has a mermaid mermaid fish. A woman, half woman, half fish, lake fish or whatever.
Uh-huh. God, there's so many out there.
The carton. Yeah.
There's so many good ones out there. And they're just getting more and more and more and more and more.
Meanwhile, poor old Budweiser and Miller decided that they're going to, well, you know, Budweiser's now InBev. But they're going to merge and form and control one third of the beer market of the world. How is that a good idea?
Yeah. Well, if you're a shareholder, it's a great idea, and we all know that all that matters is money.
I ain't going to drink the stuff. Never, you know, I haven't done it since I was probably in my 20s. That stuff is lousy.
It's,
you know,
awful. It's horrible. You know, I walk into my little bar here that has all these great craft brews, and I always tell the bartenders, I said, someone comes in and orders a Corona. I said, you know what, just throw them out. Or tell them, you know what, there's a Rite Aid down the street, you can go get it there. Or I say, I can, you know, I'll pee in a bottle for free for you.
Is that why you have to add the lime to it, to make it taste better?
I guess. I mean, Oh, it's just, I just, it's like going to Peter Luger's, which is a fancy steakhouse here, which I've never been to, of course.
Oh, I've heard of that hamburger. Place.
It's like going there and order a hamburger. Or what's the place that you always talk about, Bob? You were just talking about that has the Lagunitas.
Oh, a secret sandwich.
Can you imagine going somewhere like that and say, yeah, I'm going to order out McDonald's?
Ew. Just,
yeah. Yeah, very ooh. It's like if you want that.
Well, the
crap.
Thing is, I mean, everything is made on the place there at Secret Sandwich, with a couple of exceptions. Excellent. I mean, they make their own ketchup, even for God's sakes.
Excellent.
And yet, you know, the price of a sandwich and chips there is, I mean, you know, maybe $2 different from a quarter pounder meal deal.
Mm-hmm.
And why go anywhere else?
Yeah, why go anywhere else? And you know where it's made. You know who made it.
Oh, they really do. They pride themselves on just, you know, the little details. They've got a blue cheese spread that they use on their sandwiches, but I'll get it to go with. And they hand cut and they parboil and then they fry once and then they fry the second time with their French fries are freaking awesome. But I have the fries with the blue cheese spread, and it's just murder.
Mamma mia.
My mouth's watering again.
Doesn't that sound fantastic?
And you know, the reason I love it so much is, you know, it's right, it's in you know, Fayetteville, West Virginia, for God's sakes. And so one of the things they've been doing over there, they have these huge overflow crowds, especially during the tourist season. And so they have opened up their upstairs space, and they put a lot of effort into it as sort of like an artistic exhibit hall. They've got, you know, five or six taps and a whole bunch of bottled beer in the fridge. And Wednesday night, they hosted a poetry slam. And they just a lot of local people who write some damn fine poetry. Sitting around drinking beer and sharing their poems with each other. So one of the things I think would be fun to kind of fun to do, and not that complicated. I can take the video and audio rig over, and it'll be kind of free form, you know, not, you know, right back after this commercial kind of stuff. But no, mic people up and let them share their poetry with the world and the Horn Family Commune congregation.
You can do that now.
Yes.
That sounds pretty damn wonderful. And I actually have some Brooklyn beers in my fridge. Actually, the Brooklyn Pumpkin. I had a party last week. I bought four growlers from the local beer. Beer and poetry, what's better?
Right. And so, you know, maybe get the, you know, and just let the wider world in on just, you know, what a cool, awesome little space that is.
You know what? I need to get down there. I need to get, next time I have any time in Ohio, I need to take a road trip over to West Virginia. And you know, I've been through it. When I lived in D.C., I used to drive through it all the time. And I actually took a detour one time through, you know, that just goes through a little bit of it, but go through all the mountains. And it's just beautiful.
Oh, and we had, well, the parts that they haven't destroyed are.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah.
And you know, we had a real hard cold snap last weekend, and frankly, there wasn't much fall color on display at Bridge Day, but I'm telling you what, the colors are popping now. We drove over for an audiologist examination of Ferg's ears today, and it was a 180-mile round trip, 200-mile round trip. And all along the way, just the autumn colors, the reds and the purples and the oranges and the yellows and the little bit of, and the evergreens just sort of interspersed among them. Absolutely magnificent. Just spectacular. You should come on through. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa just said a minute ago, you sure you don't have a stake in Secret Sandwich Society, Brother Bob? No, I don't. I swear I don't. Hell, I don't even get free food. But the fact of the no, I'm just so damn proud of how good they are at what they do. And in a place like West Virginia, it's just super inspiring to see that level of quality. And that's not to say they're the only game in town over there. I mean, Pies and Pints has expanded into Columbus, Ohio, for God's sakes. And they're really good at what they do. And you know,
you know what, when I'm there at Martin Luther King Day weekend, I'm going to make my friend take me there. Pies and Pints.
Oh, yeah, yummy pizza. And their wings, they do these buttermilk sriracha marinated wings that they then fry and they grill, and they make their own homemade gorgonzola sauce, and you know, for dipping them. Yeah, oh, big time good.
Hey, I got some good news to report.
Yes?
I live about 3 miles away from a bar that serves Kalamazoo Stout, so I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, Bob, I wanted to... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you, you're into, like, super hot peppers, right?
Well, I mean, I don't go... I don't just sit around gnawing on them, but I like some fire.
Okay. Because there was a farmer's market up near... I had jury duty a couple weeks ago up in I'm in the Bronx, and you'll get a lot of local farms who happen to be Hispanic folks, Mexican folks, who seem to grow a lot of their native peppers. I didn't know what they were. I thought, you know what, if I knew what I was looking at, but next time I'm up there, I'm going to actually get some of the hotter ones for you and put them in the, like when I sent the bagels, kind of vacuum seal them.
No pushback from me on that.
Yeah. So yeah, well, next time I'm up there, assuming that it's not too far past the harvest season to do it, but yeah, there's a farmer's market up here that I'd gone to and bought some for my roommate. Likes, you know, he's like you, he likes the ghost peppers and all that, and I bought some for him. And it's funny because the guy I bought them from, I told him my roommate likes ghost peppers, and he says, "Oh, these are mild," and my roommate sent me a message saying, "Oh my God, Steve, these are super hot." It like took my breath away. So I think he was just eating them raw. So, if you use them to cook with, I'm sure they'd be pretty damn fantastic.
Oh, I can only imagine. Or to take a few of them and just do a really simple thing and marinate them in some vinegar and you know, have a hot pepper sauce out of it. Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Next time I'm up there, I'll grab you a bunch.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Like,
yeah.
And by the way, we had a note from Michael in Madison who said, I may have asked you this before, but have you been to the New Glarus Brewery? It's 30 minutes from my house, Michael in Madison says. The outdoor tasting area is gorgeous. It reminds me of the hilltop castle ruins overlooking Heidelberg, Germany. And the town of New Glarus itself is pretty nifty, home of the Swiss Center of North America. No, I've never been there, but it's on the list when I get back. And have you ever had Fat Squirrel? A delicious nut brown ale. And, you know, whenever I see the phrase nut brown ale, I have to go all Porky Pig from that one. I'll have a nut brown ale. But, no, I've never been. I haven't had. No, I had their take on a Belgian creek lambic one time, though. Holy cow, it was wonderful. That's the only time I'll do, like, fruit-flavored beers and stuff is the lambic.
Right. Yeah, that sounds really, really good. There's if you're into Belgian beers, one of the best, literally one of the best in the world. It's called Orval. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh yeah. Oh no. They've got Orval in the fridge over at Pies and Pints.
Yeah, you should. If you haven't, it's an Orval and Duvel. There's a Trappist. It's three different Trappists. It's Trappist Rochefort.
Yeah. See, they've got all three Rochefort's. At Pies, and they are equally wonderful. And the Rochefort's are a particular favorite of our buddy Chris in Germany. And they're
delicious.
Yummy. They're really yummy.
Delicious.
But I tell you what, when I'm not feeling growlerish over at Secret Sandwich, they've got one in the fridge that I've absolutely fallen in love with. It's a real, real light, golden, sparkly affair. It's Pincus Organic Munster Alt.
Yeah, I think I've actually heard of that.
Really tasty.
Pincus, I know I've heard of.
Well, yeah, they're big for being they're big in organic brewing, but I'd never had the gotcha. The Munster Alt before, and it is just it's not one of those things where you had a bunch of hipster brewers going, dude, we've got that extra two bales of hops, let's throw it in.
Yeah.
it's just crisp and clean, and you know goes pairs really really well with like snacky foods and. Love it. Oh, by the way, the New York Times has just reported that Hurricane Patricia has come ashore. It has struck the southwest coast of Mexico with sustained winds of, get this, 165 miles per hour.
Holy hell.
And they report that as the strongest hurricane to ever strike the Western Hemisphere.
Well, thank God there's no such thing as climate change. Whew.
We are in for a major El Nino this year. I mean, we've had a lot more rain than usual, starting in like the last day of July. And it's going to be one hell of a winter, I think, Bob, across much of the U.S., especially Southern Cal and who knows where else, you know?
It's terrifying. New York Times says when it hit, it transformed hotels with tourists into makeshift shelters, shuttering schools, closing airports, and sending inhabitants racing to the bus stations to flee inland. God only knows what the death toll will be out of this.
Are we talking like Cabo San Lucas, or what are we talking about? What area?
Puerto Vallarta.
Oh, Puerto Vallarta. Oh, geez. I went on my honeymoon there. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, I can't even imagine the gusts. If it's sustained at 165, what are the gusts? 200?
God only knows.
God only knows.
It had slowed considerably from earlier speeds of about 200 miles per hour. Trees being reported knocked down, landslides taking place along the road between the state capital of Colima and the port city of Manzanillo.
Echo Caro.
That's definitely not supposed to happen in the Pacific. I mean, those are the kinds of storms that you get in the Yucatan Peninsula on the Atlantic side or on the Gulf side, not the Pacific side of Mexico. That's a very scary portention, if that's a word for the future. It portends a very, some very bad weather in the coming years. I mean, it really makes me shudder to think about how bad it could be.
Well, and I mean, there are elements to this that are extra special creepy. If they do portend future events, this thing went from being a tropical storm to a Cat 5 hurricane in the space of 24 hours. It went from tropical storm winds to 200-mile-an-hour winds in 24 hours.
Wow, that's like more than doubling.
And along the way, the waters in which it developed are the hottest that area of the Pacific has ever been.
Wow. Ugh. Well, we're slowly cooking ourselves, Bob, and Mother Nature, the Earth, is finally letting us know and giving us signs.
What? But please, can we just I don't want to be too hard on them, but you know, since they were the ones who covered up the climate change data going back to the 70s, can we just give? And you know what? All of us, everybody in the world, needs to chip into this. A penny will do it fine. Everybody kick in a penny. Everybody on the planet, kick in a penny, and we will build a lovely hut for the CEO, COO, CFO, and the entire board of directors of ExxonMobil, and let them live there on, say, the Mexican coast. I mean, I would just dearly love it if the CEO of ExxonMobil was in Puerto Vallarta right now. I know that probably
that would be just desserts for sure, you know?
I mean, this damn storm was so huge that Scott Kelly aboard the International Space Station tweeted a picture of the storm and said, "It's massive. Be careful."
Wow.
The U.S. Embassy in Mexico. I'm sorry, Carol?
I said I'd be willing to even let them moor up on their yacht.
Absolutely. Yeah, come on. Yeah, come on in. Drop anchor. It'll be cool.
NBC has a live image of the storm, you know, with infrared. I've never seen such a huge purple spot.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at the picture that that Scott Kelly sent out, and yeah, it's good God. I mean, if you just look, if you go on Twitter and look up Scott Kelly, that would be at his handle is at station CDR Kelly. At station CDR Kelly, you'll see this thing from, you know, from his vantage point in the International Space Station in kind of fairly low Earth orbit, I think. And it's the damnedest thing you ever saw. I mean, it looks like a living thing crawling across the Pacific. But, you know,
it kind of is.
Well, you're kind of getting into Sharknado territory, aren't you, Carol?
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but that's funny.
That movie was based in L.A., I think, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe it's going to be factually accurate in the end here, you know?
No, Carol, you were saying?
No, that was funny, and it was right.
6 to 20 inches of rain expected in the affected areas of Mexico, flash floods and mudslides in mountainous areas.
6 to 20 inches in what period of time?
24 hours.
Oh my God! I don't even want to see the pictures are going to be just.
Hey, Bob.
Hey,
I put the space station picture in the chat.
Oh, cool.
You know, Bob, my family still down in Florida, and where they live in the Tampa area, we've lived there all our lives, and there's parts of the city now that were bad back in the 90s just from an ordinary rain. It's worse now, 20 years later, and they can't understand why. Part of it is because of the building that goes on the concrete over what used to be ground. But part of it is what you talk about all the time. You know, one day Miami's going to be underwater. Probably Tampa, at least St. Pete area. You know, good chance of it happening because with a good summer rain now, they get flooding. And, you know, of course I know this is part of global warming, part of what was predicted 30 years ago, and nobody listened. And come
Monday, Flush Flimball will be on the air saying, "Oh, it was just a hurricane, my friends. Hurricanes strike all the time. And it only struck Mexicans anyway, so that means there will be less of them to come up here and rape our women." But here's the reality of it. According to the National Hurricane Center here in the United States, damage coming from Hurricane Patricia is likely to inflict damage on a catastrophic level sufficient to make the areas that have been hit uninhabitable for weeks or months.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Betsy.
How are you?
I'm well. We're hearing you talk. I'm kind of amazed.
Yeah, well, you know, once in a while.
Yeah, every 10 years.
Nah, less than that. Usually once a year. I have some new students from the Philippines, and the last set of students I had from the Philippines ended up having their village wiped out during, I want to say, a cyclone.
Haiyan, 2013.
Yes, 2 years ago.
And this is going to be the weather folks are saying this is going to be of a strength and ferocity on a par with Haiyan.
Well, the kids that I have now, we just got two brothers from Indonesia who came 2 weeks ago. And the family, you know, has money and the parents are professionals and stuff. They, in part, are here because Indonesia's falling into the sea. That's part of why they decided to emigrate. Or I don't know if they've emigrated or if they're here for work briefly, but, you know, we get a lot of people who come for 2 years. So I don't know exactly how long they're here, but part of the reason is that Indonesia, the country of Indonesia, is falling into the sea.
Marcy.
Yeah.
And, of course, Indonesia is being virulently deforested. That's part of it. Meanwhile, in Mexico, just to put this in perspective, there have only been three Category 5 hurricanes make landfall in the last 100 years. 1935, before we were naming them, that killed more than 400 people. There was Hurricane Camille, that killed 244 people in 1969. And in 1992, Hurricane Andrew. I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a lot more of these things. But can you imagine if a Cat 5 like this, and Camille did, you know, went smack dab into Biloxi, Mississippi. Which is, the population density in South Florida, oh my God.
Was that in like 1969, Bob, or when was Camille?
Yes, Camille was 1969.
Okay.
And 244 people died, and some of those people died were the idiots who threw a hurricane party.
Oh, yeah, sure, exactly. Well, CNN has a headline here. It says, strongest hurricane ever about to hit land, 7:06 Eastern time. So I guess that was about an hour ago.
Yeah.
The Mexican government has cut off water to the, or not cut off water, but cut off electricity to the area to cut down on the risk of electrocutions and overloading of the power grid. They've got some, let's see. They've got 219 emergency power generators to provide electricity in clinics, hospitals, and water purification plants.
And I will bet you some of those hospitals won't be standing after this is over.
Well, that's the thing. One hotel was telling visitors, well, if it gets bad enough, come to the second floor. If it comes up, then we'll go to the third. But when you're dealing with waters like that, yeah, I mean, the buildings can come down.
Yep. And you're talking about Miami. The population in Florida is such now that you would have to evacuate probably at least a week in advance if you wanted to get the entire population of a major city like Miami or Tampa out of the way of one of these storms. It's not possible anymore to get people out in a 48-hour period.
I don't know if, I mean, and, you know, some of those things are kind of, they could be kind of slow rolling in the tropical Atlantic and as they move toward the Gulf. But if you got 3 or 4 days, you still, no.
Nope. The infrastructure is just not built for it anymore. And I can attest to that last time I went home to Tampa. You know, they have not done a lot of improvements to the existing infrastructure. because the Republicans under Scott and Bush, you know, none in Texas. And so,
well, and a federal government that can't do anything because it's hamstrung by the Jim Inhofe's and the Lindsey Graham's of the world.
I thought they updated the building codes after Andrew.
Well, they did, but they have. But those updated building codes have to be adhered to. All you got to do is read one or two good Carl Hiaasen novels, and you know where that goes. I mean, if Jay Cruzan was here, he could probably speak to that. By the way, this is just for the geographically ignorant like me. In the direct path of Patricia there are 7 million people.
Right here, Texas is getting heavy rains. Well, spun off of it.
Yeah, no, this thing's huge. It'll reach into Texas. Meanwhile, up in over in South Carolina, David there says, you know, we just had a low pressure system deliver over 24 inches of rain in 48 hours to some areas close to me. We got over a foot and it flooded bad here. Those other places with 2 feet of rain are still screwed up. This has got to be due to climate change. It came straight from the Atlantic Ocean. And remember, that's a hurricane that didn't actually touch. It wasn't a hurricane. The low pressure system. And it just inundated South Carolina.
Yeah, it sent in the, the phallic symbol of death.
Yeah. But...
But Patricia hits the mountains and starts winding down, the rain gets even worse.
Oh, sure. As it dissipates, and spreads out. And so the area, and so it's possible that areas of Texas that got whammied with that ungodly flooding of a few months back. Whoa! But for the sake of snark, though, I guess Mike Huckstervey's trying to figure out who the gay guy is in Puerto Vallarta that brought this on them. I mean. Earthquakes, floods, hurricanes, mudslides, blizzards, smog.
What do you think the liquor supply officer will say?
Oh, well, exactly that. I mean, I remember when Pastor John Starve Hagee was blaming the Rita that came after Katrina was blaming Rita on the homosexuals. When it turned out that the only place in, Padre Island or Corpus Christi, maybe, the only place that had a working telephone was a gay bar?
It was Galveston.
Was it Galveston?
Puerto Aransas.
What's it looking like in Austin, Betsy?
It's been raining all day. We're expecting rain straight through Sunday.
Because I was watching the F1 deals on NBC Sports Network today, and they couldn't run the practice runs.
Yeah, there's a lot. So right now it's not bad. It's been raining on and off all day. My refugee kiddos got to use umbrellas for the first time. We got somebody to donate umbrellas, and I ended up spending half the day teaching them to open them and close them and don't put them on the table and craziness. Stuff you never even think about. How to open an umbrella.
By 1 a.m. Sunday, the storm is expected to be centered just southeast or southwest of the Rio Grande.
And which way is it moving at that time? Towards the northeast?
Yeah, it's moving southwest to northeast.
So there's a possibility we could even get rain up in this area from that, we've had flooding because of the fires a few years ago. We have burn scars that flood very easy. And my point is, there's still no connection to global warming from anyone but those of us on the left. And,
well, according to NOAA, the hurricane, the tropical storm force wind speed probabilities over the next 120 hours extend up, you know, again within a couple of hundred miles of the Texas Texas border, you know, with the river border. And though, you know, by then it's like 5 to 10% possibilities.
I mean, I'm looking at the breadth of that hurricane and the pictures, and it almost looks like Katrina, you know, in terms of the magnitude, or probably even more, probably worse than Katrina, you know. So this was a Cat 5 when it hit.
Yeah, that became a Cat 5 in the space of 24 hours.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
And for the hurricane folks out there, does a tropical storm, does a storm become a hurricane at 75 miles an hour, or what is the?
Yep, 74,
okay.
Technically.
Okay.
Hey, Carol, did I see you lighting up?
No, I was just saying, you know, conservatives will say, why are we worried about it? It's only hitting Mexicans.
Well, this is like biblical, you know, biblical kinds of, to use that term.
It will hit, we'll have another Katrina soon enough.
And it's happening fairly late in the season, isn't it?
Yeah, hurricane season ends November. Well, they extended it. Didn't they extend hurricane season for another 2 weeks? It used to be November 1st. I think it's November 15th now.
So whereabouts are you in Texas, Betsy?
I'm in Austin.
Oh, okay. So you'll probably have some indirect effects from this storm, but not like a real direct effect. You might get some pretty good rains, I imagine, huh?
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And we could get something, too. Who knows? It can do all kinds of weird things when you get a major storm like that, you know, that hits the, you know, hits south of where you're at, you know?
Where are you?
Los Angeles. Yeah, we've welcome to the brave new world here of the climate change experiment that we've decided to embark upon, you know?
Well, but the thing is, I don't necessarily know that most of us were embarked on it.
No, involuntarily.
I mean, if you find out something, and you find out that something is dangerous to human existence, and then you suppress it and keep people from finding it out so that they can take personal measures to protect themselves, you know, it's not, no, I guess what I'm saying, Rick, we weren't experimenting. We were actually, thanks to ExxonMobil, being experimented upon.
We were the guinea pigs, yes. We are the guinea pigs. Yeah. Well, you know, all I can say is I'd like to somehow sue those bastards. That was going to be my next question.
When they suppress something like this and they prevent you from being able to take steps to protect yourself, shouldn't that become actionable somewhere along the way?
It certainly should. I mean, it did with regard to cigarettes. Of course, there you had a commercial product that was being sold to people. Here you have basically...
You mean like gasoline?
Well, there you go. I guess like carbon. Yeah, that's true. I guess the individual... It'd have to be a massive class action or something. I mean, I think it's possible. I'm sure that people like Mike Papantonio are trying to figure out how to get the ball rolling. And that former attorney general of, was it Louisiana or whatever, who started the tobacco lawsuit, I think?
Oh, I can't remember. I know, yeah.
I think he was from Louisiana. He was a real heavyweight. And Yeah, he got all the attorneys general together from many, many different states, all of all stripes, and you know, they got a really good settlement from the tobacco companies. Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth a shot. I mean, I'm not a class action attorney, but certainly, you know, I just do tax stuff. But, you know, I'm sure there's people out there who are talking about how to get the ball rolling and talking about test cases and, you know, where to bring the action and, you know, what actions to file and, you know, who the plaintiffs are, that kind of thing, you know?
When, you know, when you're sitting there having your cup of coffee in law school, they teach you little morsels like equity will not prefer, will not permit a wrong without a remedy. You remember that one, Rick?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, so it's pretty obvious that ExxonMobil has perpetrated a pretty egregious wrong. Where's the remedy?
Well, the difficulty you're going to have possibly is proving causation, that one particular storm was caused as a result of Exxon's contributing to global warming. You know, that's, I think that may be where, you know, where the difficulty may lie in a lawsuit, but
Ken or Gen X asking in the chat room, isn't it racketeering?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way to go, because then you get treble damages if you prove a pattern of racketeering.
And that's something an inspired sort of U.S. Attorney General could bring, isn't it? I mean, there's this little old racketeering statute, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, I think the way that it would get started is the way that the tobacco suits got started. They first got started at the state levels. And or in federal district courts as RICO actions, as civil RICO actions. And I don't know that they ever had to go criminal. I think there was talk about, I know there were criminal investigations that were going on that were spurred on by these civil RICO actions. But I don't think, I think ultimately there was a settlement of those criminal actions as part of the overall settlement of the civil actions and I think the U.S. government, actually the U.S. government does have a claim because they have to, they have to pay for, coastal flood insurance claims and so forth, I think, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the way a child enforcement support division will go after deadbeat dads. The state provides, say, health care and WIC and SNAP benefits to a child that daddy isn't paying child support for, and that confers upon the state a right to pursue daddy to get the state's money back, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, I guess with the, you know, I'm just having a problem with the causation, because even, you know, the climatologists will say that you can't prove that any one storm was caused by global warming. You have to look at the pattern of storms. And so if the basis of liability is, you know, damage caused in a particular storm like Hurricane Patricia or, you know, Hurricane Katrina or whatever it might be, you know, the victim has to somehow show that there was causation.
I think you're right. And then you're going to get into that terribly, terribly thick, goopy, swampy water known as reasonable foreseeability.
Right. Exactly. I know this issue came up with regard to the lawsuit against the Army Corps of Engineers with regard to the channel in New Orleans that was parallel to the coast, I think, and the failure of that. And I'm thinking that the judge ruled in favor, actually, of the citizens in that case, if I'm not mistaken. It might have gotten reversed on appeal or whatever, but I think they eventually ended up settling it after there was litigation. So, you know, I think the bar of causality there was I mean, I think that the thing that, that the plaintiffs had going for them in that case was that the that channel that the Army Corps of Engineers had designed was inadequate to handle the possible overflow of water from, you know, a reasonably foreseeable hurricane that hit, you know, right around New Orleans. And so there you had an actual structure that was faulty, and so you could, you know, point to that.
Right, right, right.
You know, whereas, you know, the global warming, I mean, it's a very, you know, it's a generalized kind of effect on the planet. It's not very localized, although it has local effects everywhere you are. But, you know, it's difficult to identify. That's I think causality is where they're going to have the most problems.
It is.
I've been talking about this.
It is. But I tell you, I despise those merciless bastards.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, at the very least, if we had a Congress that was representative of the American people, we could have hearings and have those asshat executives hailed before Congress and let them explain.
Hey, you know how we could get hearings? It just hit me.
Yeah?
If Sidney Blumenthal would send an email to the CEO of ExxonMobil, Harold Gowdy would have him before his committee in no time flat. And what's her name? Martha Roby, the roly-poly little bat-faced girl, could ask him questions about where he was the night that the hurricane hit and whether or not he was alone.
There you go. Oh, man, that was such a crazy question they asked Senator Clinton, I mean, or I guess Secretary Clinton.
Oh, and Martha Roby did not appreciate being laughed at. I don't see what's funny.
Was Bill catting around that night or not, Hillary?
Exactly.
Come on, tell us. Was he there or not in bed with you?
Jesus, God.
He was probably in New York.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, wouldn't you kind of expect? Oh, well. And by the way,
she was in Washington.
I would presume, yeah.
Yeah, but so that's the...
On another note, based on something Lottie brought up in the chat room a few minutes ago, there's this, and this is from a strictly self-interested capitalist standpoint. If you care about good tequila, you might want to lay in a few bottles. Because the crop may have just got taken, or may be about to take a pretty severe blow.
Get the swirly straws ready as well.
Yeah, that's only for the cheap stuff.
Yeah.
Boy, that looks like a nasty-looking possum there, girl. He's hissing?
Hissing.
Oh, we passed a possum in the middle of the road earlier today, and Ferg looked at him and said, "Hey, Dad, that one went pro." Because he wasn't playing possum anymore. Oh, yeah. He was just dead possum.
There's one on my back porch right now. I'm tearing up my trash. I had to bring the dog and the cat in.
Probably wouldn't hurt him. You think?
Well, possums don't carry rabies. I mean, they're pretty benign.
Their teeth are awfully sharp, though.
They very rarely bite. You gotta really piss them off. And most of the time, they'll play dead before they'll do anything.
Mm. So that photo was taken on your back porch then?
Just now.
Oh, wow. That's a trip.
It's still there.
You know, we used to have one that would come up on the porch and eat the cat food, and we referred to it as our watch possum. Because if anybody came around, you know, the hissing and the carrying on, obviously there was enough hissing and carrying on to get you out onto out onto your Hooterville porch, Carol.
Well, this is just a little one. It's not. I've seen huge possums before. This is just a little one. No less nasty looking, though.
But they will let you know if there's anything going on. It's kind of like geese at Scotch distilleries.
Well, the funny thing is, the cat was sitting up on the rail looking down at it, and the dog was just standing there right next to it after I walked out. After they were going nuts out there,
as soon as I opened the door, they were like, look, Mom. And as soon as I took a picture of it, they were like, okay, as long as you know it's there.
Yeah, because Cat Stevens is nobody to be screwed with. Oh, by the way, how about the little neighbor cat? Is she still coming around?
She's still coming around. She's going to come live with us soon. They don't take good care of her. She actually jumped into the dumpster next to the tire shop yesterday and couldn't get out. And my tire tech put a bar stool down in there for her to jump up on, and she was able to get out.
Now, why there's a bar stool at the... Never mind.
It's not really a bar stool. Well, I don't know what Roy does in there after hours. I probably don't want to know.
Yeah, don't ask. So are the fountains all still slushy machines in Kansas City?
They all look like 7-Eleven slushy machines. Yes, they're out at the K right now. The Royals are out there trying to clinch it. They've got one more win they got to get to snatch victory away from Toronto. Like, I care. You know my motto, go Royals and take the Chiefs with you.
But the town's pretty. Yeah,
Kansas City is called the City of Fountains, and when the Royals are at the stage, what they do is they dye all of the fountains blue, but they don't look royal blue. They look like 7-Eleven slushy machines, or Slurpees.
Kind of a Marge Simpson's hair blue.
It's really gross looking. I posted a picture of it last year because, I pulled up to a stoplight on Southwest Boulevard, turned around and looked, and just burst out laughing. It's the most bizarre thing you've ever seen.
We've seen some bizarre stuff. I don't know.
Well, I mean, for Kansas City, this is a pretty, you know, not exactly the mecca of excitement.
So is that what was it called? Stanford and Sons, that bar and restaurants.
Bar and restaurants.
Still in KC.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You could smell the bread they baked from three miles away.
Yes, it's still there.
And they still break the bread in clay flower pots.
Clay flower pots.
They still do. Come on up, and I'll take you there.
I'll be there in a minute.
And then we'll go to, Crazy Good Eats Barbecue. And I am not a barbecue fan, but their bacon-wrapped meatballs will make you slap grandma.
Oh, but it's that obscene breakfast pastry thing that captures my imagination. you put it up on Facebook one day, and it was like, dear God.
Oh, that was at the Big Biscuit.
Yeah, some sort of sticky, gooey.
Yeah, that's at the Big Biscuit. Whenever my friend from Austin, Texas comes up, that's where we have breakfast. It's pretty awesome.
Do you ever come down here, Carol?
No, my parole officer won't let me leave the state.
Oh.
I'm kidding, Betsy.
Another one of those terms of the plea agreement?
It's another one of those terms of the plea agreement. I jokingly say stuff like that and people get really quiet and go, okay.
No, it's like what I was saying when Charles called in for the first time from Tennessee the other night. He was talking about, they asked him, you know, about his leg, and he explains that, you know, cerebral palsy. And I said, no, that's where you, well, you know, there was a shark attack. And you're not technically lying.
I like that.
You just say, there was a shark attack, and they shut up. And you haven't lied.
I do like the plea agreement thing. You know, like when people ask me to hold their baby.
Oh, no, I can't do that.
No, it's part of the plea agreement. I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Betsy, can I involve you in a little bit of somewhat controversial topicality?
Maybe.
Would you care to chime in on BB's comments on the Holocaust? Well, at least he didn't start out with swearing, so you know we're doing good.
He's an evil moron, but he's not as wrong as you think he is.
Oh no, no, no! I know the Mufti said some really nasty crap.
Right, so he's not quite as wrong as we'd like to believe, but I mean, what's the purpose of saying any of it? Like,
right? Well, and that's my whole point.
I don't know. I don't know, you know, he doesn't have to disclose where he gets money, but I would venture to guess that there is some arms manufacturing sending him money.
To empower the Holocaust deniers?
No, to keep tensions high.
Well, I mean, they're about as high as they've lately been, aren't they?
They really are. They're really bad.
Well, I mean, the reason I was struck by it was the fact that so many historians in Israeli universities just yelled, "What?"
Right. Yeah. No. It's absolutely really. It's scary. It's scary. And, you know, a colleague of mine who is neither Jewish nor Palestinian nor Muslim nor any of those things, she's, you know, I think she's Presbyterian. She asked a question and I don't have a decent answer.
To wit?
Why not make Jerusalem entirely a UN international city?
I've been asking that for years.
And, you know, it doesn't belong to anybody. Because clearly nobody can handle it.
It belongs to the world.
Right. But it doesn't belong to anybody specific.
Yeah, and we'll let the Norwegians police it.
Yeah, something like that. Because it's, you know, but this isn't even really about Jerusalem. I mean, this is about all of it. It's...
Well, and I guess my question is, there seems to be consensus that was a really stupid, loopy, you know, kind of letting loose of reality kind of thing to say. But it doesn't threaten, I mean, what, I mean, it's a parliamentary system of government. I mean, couldn't there have been a no-confidence vote like 15 minutes later?
I wish. I mean, I really wish that somebody would do that. It's, I don't know. He's scary. He's really bad news for Israel.
Well, when the Germans have to lecture you.
He's bad news for everybody. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
No, I said, you know, when Angela Merkel goes, "Oh, Bibi, no, we did it. Okay, we have to deal with this. We live with it all the time. We did it." I mean, I read some professor of German studies at an Israeli university was just about fit to chew through the straps. I don't want to take it into the larger area, but I did want your perspective because I sit out here and technically, you know, I don't have a dog in the hunt either.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
look, I do have a dog in the hunt, and I would absolutely hate to see Jews unwelcome in Jerusalem. However, I also don't like seeing the loss of life, and, you know, there has to be a solution. There really does. And it's time to start thinking about what that is.
Well, the sad thing is, I think the solution has been considered in certain quarters, and unfortunately, it winds up with the word "final" in front of it.
Well, no, that's not quite what I was referring
to. No, I know. I know it's not. But, well, you know, and okay, can we, since, because I've addressed this a couple of times, are y'all ever going to speak up when one of the y'all, you know, because, you know, it's on you now, Betsy. You're officially, you speak for, you know, World Jewelry, okay? You're nominated. Okay.
All right. Somebody had
to. Yeah, yeah. Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. All right. I take the job.
Right.
Yeah.
Abe Foxman was busy this evening. I tried. But so, you know, all these right-wing ideologues, you know, your Cruises and Huckabees and whatnot. And you know, they drag y'all into their weirdness with the words, with the phrase Judeo-Christian heritage.
Yeah.
Would y'all please do something about that?
Yes. Every time I hear it, I say, which is the Judeo part?
Right, because I don't, you know I'm trying to remember when it was that the little caravel SS Hillel, you know, pulled into Newark Harbor or something. Because that kind of didn't happen, did it? You know, yeah. As far as the founding of the United States or the colonization.
No, there have been Jews involved with the history of the United States since before there was a United States. That's not the issue.
No, yeah, there's no issue there.
But not from a religious viewpoint.
Ben Franklin was an honorary member of the, I think, the largest synagogue in the colonies at the time, the one in Philly.
Right. Right. I've been there. Actually, I mean, I've been to the reconstructed whatever that's there. That's where the Jewish Museum is in Philly now. Last time I was there, that was one of our excursions. There were Jews who were involved with financing and fighting in the Revolutionary War. The synagogue in Newport predates the founding of the nation. You know, the predates the Revolutionary War. There's all kinds of ways in which Jews have been present in the history of the United States.
Right, but when these clowns use that phrase Judeo-Christian.
Right, but the same people who are doing that are denying that the founders had secular intent. So it's just bullshit.
It is. And the thing is, they're trying to drag Judaism into their at least some little niche corner of their dream of theocracy.
So here's the scary part of that. I mean, there's a lot of scary parts, but I, for reasons that I can't go into, I now belong to an Orthodox synagogue, which I rarely attend, but I belong to an Orthodox synagogue. And the number of people there who have right-wing mentalities it's astounding to me, because I've never been a part of a synagogue, and the synagogue has become modern. It used to be very, not black hat, but it was not a modern Orthodox synagogue. It was much more traditional. It's now modern Orthodox. There is some involvement by women, although not nearly enough. It's going in the right direction.
But the men are still praying that prayer.
Oh, yeah. I actually have very little problem with that prayer. I'm one of the few. I feel like any man who's witnessed childbirth is absolutely sincere in saying, thank you, God, for not making me a woman. I believe it's a sincere prayer on their part.
So does that mean y'all have to watch prostate surgery and then you get to say, thank God I was not born a man?
I actually think that saying thank you, God, for making me in your image is the better, or making me according to your will is the better prayer. I think we get the better one. So that one doesn't, that doesn't bother me at all. I have a lot of issues with a lot of things in Orthodox Judaism. That's not, that doesn't even, that's not even on the list. I think we get the better prayer. I just think that because it's a male-centered religion, people aren't even willing to consider that, that that's a possibility. Do you know, does that make sense at all?
Yeah, it does. And that's a fair response. It absolutely is.
But anyway, so a friend of mine who, he's a guy, he's gay, which I don't know how that much that relates to this, but he's a feminist. He's always been a feminist. A young guy in the community got in a fight on someone's Facebook wall that she's not even Orthodox, but she had this virulently anti Planned Parenthood and abortion is murder rant on her wall, and he said, basically, you're full of shit, because here's what Judaism actually says. Judaism actually allows abortion. Judaism actually allows this, 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 and this. You know, you're adopting the worst of Christian thought. And she unfriended him. I was like, all right.
Oh, Facebook wars, please.
But no, I mean, forget, but these are people who know each other in person.
Oh, okay. So
it matters more than a Facebook war. I mean, it's kind of a small community. So I don't know.
By the way, I've
never, until recent years, I've never had the right wing bullshit. What did Matt, now I'm forgetting his name. Matthew. I'm getting his name wrong. Non-troversy.
Matt Osborne.
Matt Osborne. Right. I mean, that we have adopted all of the Christian non-troversies is just really, you know, disheartening.
Well, interestingly, Ron in the Unfrozen North just sent a message saying, with regard to the make it a UN international city, Canada could provide the peacekeepers now that we've canceled our part of the F-35 project. Trudeau seems to want to hit the ground running. Yeah, all good so far. Oh, and a little food porn coming from Ron. Just got home from taking my lovely bride out to a fish and chips dinner. East Coast cod, hand-cut fries, homemade coleslaw and tartar sauce, accompanied by a good local craft beer. It's been a while since we've had the Queen of the Minions on Friday on the front porch. So you're getting a vote of confidence, Carol.
Yeah, he's a giver.
Yeah, he is.
So, Bob, can I give you a personal thing while I'm having you on the air?
Absolutely.
You know, my son was in Jerusalem. My son has a lot more ties to Israel than I do. I haven't been to Israel since 1980. He's been there three times. He was nominated by people in the Austin Jewish Film Festival to go to the Jerusalem Film Workshop, which is they have a directing program and a filming program and all of these things for young cinematographers.
Oh, wow.
So he was there for 6 weeks over the summer and edited and produced a short film, a short documentary. It was screened in Israel while he was there. It was screened for the hometown crowd here in Austin last night. And I inquired, I said, I don't have a ticket to the film festival. Can I come to the reception on Thursday night and see my son's film being screened? So not only did they invite me, I had no idea this was going to happen. They gave me a full pass to the entire festival. I had absolutely no idea that was going to happen. But I got to watch it being filmed, and I got to listen to him take professional question, you know, and professionally answer all of these questions. And the people asking the questions, it was an easy crowd, because half of these people have known him since he was 4 years old.
Oh, that's neat.
It was.
And he is, I mean, that's where he's settled. He's settled on film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll be heading out to L.A. after he graduates, unless he gets some fantastic job somewhere else.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, his whole thing in Europe, where he was first semester of last year, or second semester of last year, was at the film school in Prague.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of incredible that he's really making a name for
himself. Well, he started out at, like, UT San Antonio or something?
Right. So he didn't get into UT proper, UT here. They only take the top 8% of every class. So he got to go, he had to go to UT San Antonio, where he had to get a certain GPA, earn a certain number of credits, and then here's the part that, being my kid, he had trouble with, and not have any disciplinary actions. So being Lucas, he had several infractions for riding his skateboard after 10 p.m.
Scofflaw.
Apparently you're not allowed to ride your skateboard on campus after 10 p.m. because of noise. But, you know, he got back here and he's been in film ever since, and he's doing well. So I just wanted to share that. I know you and others in the Horn family have watched him grow up, and he's been on air with you at least once that I know of.
Yeah.
Veganism.
Yes.
He called in to talk about veganism.
Is he still a vegan?
No. He is vegetarian. He only did the vegan thing for less than a year, and then, thank goodness, gave it up. Not that there's anything wrong with it, as long as you actually know how to cook.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean,
when you're expecting your mother to cook for you, you damn well can't be vegan.
Eat, eat, eat only goes so far, right?
No, you know, he didn't shop and he didn't cook. So it got impossible.
Amazing. Well, you know, we've seen and heard a lot in 10 years, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, it's, he was 11.
Yeah.
He was 11 when I found you, when you found us. I didn't find you, you found me.
Yeah. And Cassie and,
the Phillip, smart
mom. And the smart mom and
Deb in Arizona. There were a whole bunch of us.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Who all showed up in one night. And your lovely wife booted one of them out about 3 minutes after he arrived.
For untoward behavior.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
It was...
We've
been together a long time.
Indeed. Like I said, 10 years. It's flown by. But all I have to do is look at my kids and I go, well, it didn't fly.
Yeah. And those grandkids who didn't exist yet.
No. Weren't even ideas.
But, all right, so what are we doing special for the anniversary?
Well, I mean, we're kind of anniversarying tonight and Monday night. I mean, nothing particular.
This is the 10-year, like, we need to do, like, a trivia contest or a, I don't know,
I'd love to be able to go back into the archives and just find some random fun stuff, but you know how the conversations go here. Random fun stuff can take 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's all kinds of neat stuff back there, and maybe that's a project someday. I don't know.
I think that you should broadcast part of the first internet-only porn.
I may be able to find
go
that.
Go back and let us hear that first one.
Yep.
Because none of us, except for Lottie, were here. Right?
That's, well, David from South Carolina was. Jim was. As Tom noted when he put out his challenge this evening, by the way, which got met.
John Fox was here, obviously.
No, for the very first broadcast, John wasn't. John,
really?
John didn't come in, and John and Bruce didn't come in until like first, second week of November, I think.
Okay.
iPie in the chat room just said, Bob, do a quick FOIA with the NSA for an index to your archives. Yeah, they've probably indexed it. We haven't, but they have.
When did Agent Fred come up?
Agent Fred popped up fairly quickly because...
Six months in.
Yeah, because we were having all these problems with somebody just hitting the bejesus out of one port. And Peter isolated it and found out it was somebody who was contracted to the Defense Department and the NSA.
Hey, Bob, I know what you should do.
What's that?
And I thought that was just a running joke on the show, Bob.
No, it was real, Rick.
Oh, no. Well, there was really an Agent
Wow.
Fred.
Wow.
Yeah, no, Agent Fred's real.
Would you actually hear
get some of the old people to come back for one night. You should contact people and see if they'll come back on and reminisce with you.
That could be fun. Maybe I'll put out some feelers over the course of the weekend. Of course, it's a little bit more difficult now because, you know, without the Comrex here, I can't bring, you know, four lines on at the same time, and we can only do it through the Skype mechanism.
Most of us have Skype, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, we haven't heard John Fox's voice in a long time. I don't know, you know, I don't know who else is still around that.
He seems to be a pretty busy man.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I don't know who's around that you want to talk to or that be willing to talk or that's healthy enough to talk.
Right, I think at anniversary time last year, Peter chimed in, and that was awfully nice. Maybe check in with Joe Vecchio.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, you slice it, we got to get out of here because lo and behold, it just turned over to 9 o'clock.
Well, 8 o'clock, but yeah.
6 o'clock.
Oh, good stop chat. It! You know what I mean? Yeah. Time. Yeah, closing time. Thanks everybody for chiming in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and via phone. I'm sorry if there were any calls that came through, on the stress line that I wasn't able to get to, but it was awfully nice to hear from Kevin. Thanks. Didn't even hear from Horst, and he's been in the room. Thanks, Betsy. Thanks, Carol. Thanks, Jeremy. And thank you, Rick. And thank you as ever over all these many, many years, to Sparky for hosting the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. They will kick up again about 12:05 Eastern Time, 9:05 Pacific, right after Malloy. In the meantime, have a lovely weekend. And over the course of 10 years, thank you to everybody who has made this the dynamic, engaging, exciting, fun, enjoyable, pleasant, magnificent experience it has been. Cross your fingers and we'll do it for another 10. What do you say? Let's play 2. And always, 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 yeah, Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.